Gentlemen, welcome to the Board Game Gateway, episode number 26. We are your entryway into the world of board games, tabletop games, and fun times. We are half a podcast tonight, I guess you could say. For the second time only in our podcast history, we're going a duo. That's the one.
Yeah, a duel, as it were.
A duel, yeah. As it were.
It's the Board Game Gateway duel.
Oh, God. My name is Neva, and I'm your host for this evening. Sitting across the table from me tonight is Mr. Ralph. Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone. Thank you.
Mate, this is the second time that we've done a podcast as a duo.
Yeah.
This is the first time we're doing a duo podcast in person. Last time we did it was over Discord.
So. And it's quite different doing it in person, I think, because last time we tried to cram every single board game genre known to man.
Oh.
That was quite a challenge.
Yeah, board game genre reveal. What an episode that was.
That was a fun one, though.
It's also interesting because I want to speak to the camera sometimes, yes. But I also want to speak to you because we're going to have... Yeah, mate. We're having the chat
Just two mates having a good discussion about exactly things
right.
We love.
If you want to know what I'm looking at, you can go to our YouTube channel, Board Game Gateway, on YouTube. There we'll have all of our video podcasts as well as some Let's Plays, which Ralph has got up there, like Slay the Spire, some of his Blood on the Clock Tower, which, speaking of, you just held a Blood on the Clock Tower night on Friday.
I did. I'm quite proud because one of the goals this year I set was like, I want to run consistent Clock Tower events. Like, mm-hmm. I want them to grow. And we had our biggest one yet so far. We had over 20 people register, and even more came on the night.
That's great.
So we got two games running. We ran the three base scripts. So the first time ever we ran all three. And it was fantastic.
Yeah.
What a night. And I played a game with, like, Matt's brother-in-law. I didn't even know.
Yeah, I was gonna mention Hamish. He is actually... So I actually play basketball against Hamish.
Okay.
We're on opposing teams. But he's a big board gamer as well. And I caught him on Sunday night. And I said, hey, how'd Friday night? And he goes, oh, mate, it was great. He goes, your mate Ralph, though, backstabbed me twice.
I did.
And I go, why? And he goes, well, he said that I was doing too well after the first game, so I had to backstab him because he's doing too well. And I go, well, that's a compliment more than anything.
You know, I felt really bad, right? So he took me to a corner and we had a chat as soon as the game started. Mm. And he read pretty genuine. At least I told him that. Right. but he was so sus. Later on in the game, when he said, well, I'm the fortune teller, I just sort of came out, hang on, but I'm the fortune teller, you just claimed my role in front of everyone. So yeah, I got him good.
That's like, I have not been to one of the nights yet, because every night you've organized it so far, I've had something on, which is but I am so keen to get down for a Clock Tower night, because every time we've talked about it, everyone's like, this just craps all over the old werewolf games, and this is like the definitive social deduction game. So
yeah, it is a lot to run. It's a lot to like get into, but once you do, it's got like a fairly okay entry point in your first game. You sort of understand what's going on, and then like after that, you just lean into it. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Look, I think a lot of people... But the fact that you had multiple games going for the night at any one time is a really a good sign.
It was like that for the 3-4-hour event that it was, which is insane.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. So, look, I'm looking forward to getting to the next one, and I think if I can get there or someone, we definitely need to like do some sort of recording, but we're going to do that. But enough about worrying about what we will do in the future. Let's talk about some of the games that we've been playing over the past week. I'd like to start, if you don't mind, Ralph,
because
I want to have a chat about a game that our friend Damo introduced to us on Friday night. He came over for a game night, and we had myself, Damo, and my friend Paul, or Mav. We all call him Mav. He just never goes by the name Paul. So, but anyway, he brought over, he suggested that he really wanted to get to the table Tigris and Euphrates. He's played it a lot, but he has said he's never played his own copy of it. And I went, what do you mean you've never played your own copy of it? And he goes, he brought it over and he goes, I legitimately have not even punched the tiles
yet. Yeah, wow.
So we got it out of the box and we punched the tiles.
Insane.
We got to play it. So for those of you who've never heard what Tigris and Euphrates is, it was a game designed in 1997 by Dr. Rainer Knizia, and it is, the best way I can describe it, it is essentially an abstract war game where Up to four players are placing one of four colored tiles, black, green, blue, and red, on this game board in front of us. And essentially what we are trying to do is each tile represents the growth or the population of a city as they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Each player has four leader tokens, each representative of one of those colors. And the game itself plays very simply. On your turn, you really can only do one of four things. You can either place a tile down on the game board somewhere, and then you'll pick up a game. You actually have a player board, and you have tiles kept secret from other players. You have six tiles in front of you, and you can only ever play one tile. So what you'll do is you'll play one of these tiles to the game board in front of you, making a population get bigger and trying to score points. How do you score points? Well, your leader tokens are in those four colors. So you have one black, one green, one red, and one blue. And so I can place one of my leader tokens adjacent to a red city tile, because all the cities start off as red tiles. I can place a leader token adjacent to that red tile, and now I have controlling stake inside of a city, which seems pretty cool. And then depending on what color my leader is, if I play that tile in that city, I get a cube. Cubes are victory points. So one cube, one victory point, right? So if I have a black leader in this city and I play a black tile down, I get one cube. Congratulations, I'm one point closer to victory. Black is actually the wild color as well. So if I play my black leader into any city, I can play any color tile and get victory points. So that was a little confusing, but once you understand that, it's pretty simple, right? So you're just basically making cities bigger. But it sounds pretty simple, but where this game starts to become really cool is, I mentioned you have six tiles behind your player screen. And there are two sorts of conflicts you can get into in this game. The first is called internal conflicts, and the second is called external. Essentially, infighting and cities going to war with each other. Okay. The first one basically says, Ralph, I've got my red leader token in this city, and you're like, Anthony is scoring way too many, Neep is scoring way too many points off of that red token. I'm going to take my red leader and place it in that city. You have to place it in a red. What that does is it starts a internal conflict, and this is how it resolves. Very simply, you then have to play as many red tiles from behind your screen as you possibly have. So let's say you have three, and I had two. Therefore, you just won the internal conflict, because resolve.
Are those tokens then spent?
Yes, they're out of the game, and they're out of the game board. So you can use these tiles, so you can't use them again. Once a tile has been either been placed on the game board or used for bidding, it gets discarded from the game. So you just won the game.
The internal conflict.
So we also have to plus however many red tiles we have next to our leader. So you were next to one, I was next to one. It's 3-2, you win versus one. Congratulations, you just booted my leader out of the game. And for me to even put him back on the game board, that is then going to cause, that's an action. So you now can start grabbing victory points. So that's an internal conflict, right? It's basically, he's scoring a lot of victory points off of this city. I want to get it out of there. The second one is a external conflict, where essentially two cities go to war with each other. Now, if I had a black... Actually, let's make it my blue leader for this example. If I have my blue leader in one city and you have your blue leader in another city, and I join these cities together with a tile, so now they're connected, our leaders go to war because our cities are fighting over the territory, because we're joining two cities together, because there can only ever be one leader of one color in the city at any one time. We can have blue leaders and green leaders coexisting, but there can never be two blue leaders. That's just against the rules of Tigris and Euphrates, as it was. And the way that the external conflicts then is basically, again, this bidding system of how many blue tokens do I want to bid? Because in this example, we're using blue. But because my city had six blue tiles to begin with and yours had zero, I'm already up 6-0 before we even get to the bidding phase. So you go, crap, I'm not going to bid anything. And I go, sweet, it's an automatic default victory. I kick your dude out. And away we go. And this is the whole game. That's the whole game in a nutshell. It's basically placing tiles, placing leaders, and trying to connect all of the cities to get points by placing tiles. The final rub of this game is twofold, is that we can create monuments. If I create a 2x2 square of any one color, I put a monument on the board. And that monument scores me victory points of one of the four colors, up to two of the four colors every turn, every one of my turn.
Can someone take the monument off you?
Someone can only take the monument off you if I remove your leader out of the game board. So your leader, leader is the same color as the monument, at the end of my turn, it just gives me a victory point.
Cool.
So we're making monuments, but then fighting over those monuments because it gives VP. Here's the rub, and here's where this game takes a massive twist, which is, I mentioned that you're getting cubes in all of the four colors. The winner of this game, your score is the value of the lowest total cubes in your hand. So if I had 5 black cubes, 2 green, 7 red, 7 blue, my victory point total is 3, because that's my lowest value. Did I say 3?
You said 2.
Said 2.
It's two green cubes.
It's 2. So my victory point total would be 2. Yeah, even though I got 5 and 7 and 7, because my lowest one was 2.
So you're always trying to balance out your lowest.
And this is what makes this game brilliant, which is you could just go, well, Ralph's just going big on red. Let's just let him have red. He's not doing anything else on any color. He's currently getting 0 points for everything.
Yeah,
and because you are trying to fight and you need...
But you wouldn't do that. You would balance it out.
You wouldn't, but you may not realize how you're doing it, right?
Oh, okay.
And that's the other thing, which is that you... And that's why this game becomes really fun. Now, I know this is... Probably some people listening to this have gone, oh, it sounds a bit dry. And I have to admit, it is a bit dry.
It sounds tense. It sounds like there's a constant cold war happening.
It is. And it really much is, because your choice is literally, do I want to build up a city and try and connect it in and maybe get some power?
Mm.
Or do I want to try and maybe do an internal conflict because I think I've got enough red tokens to kick him out of there?
And how do you get more tokens?
You just draw up to 6 at the end of every turn.
Oh, okay. So everyone's got a stockpile of 6 tokens,
yes,
sort of thing. Okay.
But there's not an even distribution. So there's less black tiles than there is... green, okay. Which there is blue.
So there's more valuable than others.
Exactly right.
Yeah, okay.
So the game itself plays in about 2 hours, and it is a fantastic abstract war game. When I say abstract, it basically, if you don't
understand. It's tile laying.
Yeah, it's like when you don't, it's like, it's not dudes on a map, it's not me moving units, it's like supposed to represent us doing political infighting and then external war fighting between cities. That's what it kind of represents.
Mm.
It's very, as I would say, it's very brown, but the colors of the tiles make up for it. Yep. But it's very, very tense, because this game literally invites you to mess with your friends. Mm. If we were playing this game, I would be very tempted to take a tile and then maybe connect you and Damo up so you two start fighting. Because I don't have to connect my cities.
Wow,
I just place tiles anywhere.
But why would you want us to fight?
Because if you two fight, then, in an external conflict, whatever color loses, so whichever city loses, all of the tiles of that color get removed from the game board. So you can actually break cities up, you can repair them.
And you can cause someone else to lose a monument.
Yes,
or something
exactly
as well.
Right. And there's a few of these things.
It sounds like a really cool game. There's a lot going on, a lot to think about. Like, it sounds so tense.
There was one moment in the game, I said to Damo, I said, I get what I'm doing here. I get the game, but it hasn't clicked for me yet. I don't get the interactions. And there was 3 moments in the game where I had the first click, where I'm I had the first click and I went, oh, I get how that works. Then I had the second click where I'm like, oh, I understand how that piece of the... And then the third and final one was like, I now fully understand how I can mess with people and actually start the political, what I'm fighting over.
Yeah.
And that was a very big thing, because when I was doing that, I'm like, I didn't know what I was actually doing. There was one moment in the game where I'm like, okay, you don't get one action, you get 2 actions every turn. So I could place a leader and place a tile, or
place
a calamity token, which I haven't talked about, but essentially it's like I can just blow up a connection between these two cities because I feel like it with my calamity tile. You only get two of those in the game.
The game sounds fairly simple, and it sounds tense. But Board Game Geek says it has a 3.5 out of 5 for complexity.
It's not actually that complex. Because it's abstract, it can bounce off a lot of people. Because it's like, even when Damo was teaching me, and I'm like sitting there going, yep, I get it. But I had to keep constantly asking questions. Like I was asking, so if I do this, that means that happens, correct? He's like, yes. So, but once I got my head around that, then all of a sudden I wouldn't say it's a 3.5. I'd probably give it, I know it's only a 0.5, but I give it a 3. It's not like a mid-weight. It's a bit above a mid-weight, but it's not it's, I wouldn't say it's really that hard.
It sounds excellent. Like, yeah, it sounds like, really cool.
I had this one moment where I'm literally sitting there. It was Deimos' turn. I'm sitting there looking at one spot on the board going, I have this brilliant move planned out so long as Deimo just doesn't touch that area of the board. Because I have this really cool idea where I could place these tiles which would force a conflict between myself and Mav. I should win this. It'll boot him out. That'll give me some victory points.
Mm.
And he's just, but Mav had been sitting there just generating victory point after victory point for a few turns. It wasn't that I was trying to pick on someone. It was just like I needed to stop him.
Yeah.
But then Deimo had other plans and played a tile. I literally yelled at him. I went, what the hell are you doing? The hell wasn't said. It was the expletive. I was like, I actually yelled at him. Go, anywhere but there, Deimo. I had a great plan. He's like, but he went, yeah, but even if it's a great plan, that plan doesn't help me. And I go, yes, but it stops Mav. Right? It was just like that moment of like the fact that I actually had that moment of what are you doing? Right.
Meant
that I was engaging properly with the systems. And because I was engaging with the systems, I was having a lot of fun. I highly recommend anyone, if you get a chance to play it, if you're what BGA would call a core gamer, you like big games, you like fun games. It's because it's not a war quote-unquote game.
It's a heavy strategy game.
But it is strategy, and it's so much fun.
It's on Board Game Arena as well, I saw.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to go on there and give that a go, because that could be a lot of fun.
Like, the time it says it takes, like, 34 minutes on average to play it, but I don't know.
That's all right. That's not too bad. Look, considering we played in 2 hours in person, it was really good. Anyway, I highly recommend it. It will bounce off some people. But if you can get through that initial rules explanation, it'd be great. It is out of print. It is out of stock.
Yeah, like so Rhino Canizia, like, prints it in 97.
Yeah,
like,
he sold the rights to another company as well, and that company then has sold it to someone, and it's in, like, hell or whatever it is. So they're hoping to get a reprint soon, but they've been hoping for a reprint for the past couple of years. So if you can find a copy, you will be paying a premium for it just because it's not out there a lot.
Yep.
However, it is a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that he introduced that to me. That's one more off the list of Deimos games that I have to play. So yeah,
I think that one's been on my radar for quite some time. It's just a game I have to play. Yeah. Like, it's just, you know, you look at like all the best games throughout history, and that one's always up there.
Yeah. And so we're going to go from Tigris and Euphrates. We're going to end that one now. We're going to continue on to our main chunk of the discussion for this week, unless, Ralph, you have another game that you've played this week that you want to bring us into, or shall we start our discussion?
No, I think we should start our discussion, our theme for the week, I'd say.
Absolutely. So as we decided that we didn't decide there was only going to be two of us, but when we realized there was only going to be two of us, what we decided to do is, well, why not we make that the theme? Let's make two player games and two player extravaganzas a theme, which is that if you're watching the YouTube video right now, you'll see a game board in front of us. We're gonna save this one until later, but we're gonna start with what we are calling our gateway game of the week this week, which is a great two player game. It does play up to four, but we're gonna call this a great two player game, which this week is My City by Rainer Canizia again. So
the doctor look again.
From that though, I'm gonna pass that to you, Ralph, and take the listener through what My City is.
So on the podcast, I'm pretty much known as the campaigner, sort of the campaign game player. And My City is actually a campaign in which you can play with your loved one or another person. my wife and I, we did play through My City. My sister actually bought this for me for my birthday 2 years ago. And we played probably 80% of it within the 2 years, and then we only just finished it last week. So.
Still counts.
My City is a very simple tile laying game. It's probably the most simple tile laying game I've ever played, to be completely honest. So you have your board in front of you. Each player has their own individual board, and essentially it's just a blank canvas. You got little trees, you've got little rocks, and just mostly green hills and a giant river that runs throughout it. The art kind of reminds me a bit of Carcassonne on the actual
kind of like board. Green countryside look and feel, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's My City. You're developing this sort of estate in a way. So the way the game plays is, first up, you take all your tiles out and you put them all face up, and there's three colored tiles. There's blue, yellow, and red. They all do the same thing. But essentially, you have a deck of cards. I believe there's about 30 of them in the game. And you flip the card over, and that will tell you what type of tile you put down. Now, all three types of tiles, they're all different shapes, but they all do the same thing. They're kind of like Tetris shapes, so like the in a way.
Polyomino sort of, like, well, they're not the tetromino, because tetromino refers to the Tetris actual pieces, but I think it's polyomino or whatever it is.
Yeah, they're pretty much the Tetris shapes.
Yeah,
like, much. They're all different. They're all unique. Like, there's, like I said, I think there's about 10 or so different shapes in each color.
Awesome.
And they're all different shapes, but yeah, that's that type of style. But you'll flip the card and say it's the long L piece. You both players will grab that long L piece and put it in their city. So okay, you have to start from the river, and then after that is placed, you flip the next card. You grab both grab that same tile, and the rule is it just has to touch your previous tile.
Can you go across the river?
You can't build directly across, but like if your tile is touching the river, you can build on the other side of it as well.
Okay.
So you keep playing like that. Say you flip a tile normally later in the game and you can't place it anywhere, you could lose a point and continue your game. Or you can say, you know what, my game's over, I'm not going to place any more tiles.
That's really cool.
So you can keep going. That is, you can kind of push your luck if you're looking for that perfect piece to come out on the card flip. You can say, I'm going to lose a point, might lose 2 points if the next one's crap and then the next perfect piece comes out.
So how do you actually score points to actually win a game of My City?
So I believe the first game actually starts with a well on the map. And if you surround the well, you get an additional 4 points.
Sweet.
I mentioned there's rocks on the map. Every exposed rock is minus a point.
Right, so you want to get rid of the rocks.
And if you leave trees exposed, that's worth a point.
Okay.
But you also lose points for every blank green space you have out on the map.
Okay.
So at the end of the game, you count up all your points, and then you deduct all your negative points.
Okay.
That is essentially the first game you play.
How many games do we actually play?
This game has 24 games.
24, jeez.
In the campaign.
Right.
Now, it does sound like a lot, but a game is literally just flipping the same deck of 30 cards.
Okay.
So things come out in different order.
Well, how long is a game? 30, 45 minutes or something like that? Or
I reckon 10.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Yeah, right, so you could knock through nearly half a campaign in a couple of hours, realistically.
So the campaign, like each... The game has envelopes in it. Mm. And each envelope is 3 or 4 games.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And in that, it slowly introduces new rules to you. Okay. So, you know, I mentioned you have a well. I think in one of the earlier ones, you actually get a sticker and you get a sticker of another well.
Right.
Okay. And if you win, you might get an additional bonus, and the player that loses doesn't get that bonus.
Right. Okay.
So you're constantly evolving your park land that you're going to build on top of.
Mm-hmm.
There might be ways that if you win, you get more trees and the other player gets more rocks.
Right, okay.
So it is hard to catch up, but it's not impossible, because there are certain things that happen that if you win, you get a little bit of a perk, but sometimes the player that loses gets the better perk, and you don't typically know that until you finish the level.
So would you say that this game, as a two-player experience, you reckon it'd be, you said it's hard to catch up. Do you think that if one player is, you know, exponentially better, does that really show through in this game? Or is there ways of, like, you know, them being able to actually get those wins in this game? Like, there's no way that I can affect your card, right? Okay.
There's no way you can affect my card. We both place our piece at the same time. I'm not allowed to look over and see what you're doing until I've locked my piece in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no shuffling it around. Once you said, yep, that's where I want to put that little piece, that's where it stays.
Yep.
There are some catch-up mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
There's sometimes where you might get a bit of a bonus and the other player gets the better bonus, even though you are the better player in a way, because you won the last game.
Yep.
So like, it's not impossible. We finished the 24 games. I won by like literally 1 point. Like, it was extremely close between my wife and myself in that game. I'm kind of being a bit cagey when I'm explaining this game, because like I said, there's those envelopes that change the game. And you're putting more and more stickers on the map. You're getting more and more bonuses. More exciting things come out. And things that drastically change the game. But you're not relearning a million rules.
Okay.
You're still flipping the same cards.
It's just the placement and a few other things differ.
That's right. Sometimes the rules do change where it's like you get your three colors, but sometimes it's like, well, if you build all the red together, you get triple points. So you're trying to navigate right. that little puzzle. So the little puzzle always is constantly changing. And I'd highly recommend this. It plays up to four, but we played it at two. It was still fantastic.
The game is relatively cheap for Australian dollary dues. I think it's about $45-$50 at the moment. It's really, really cheap for the amount of game that you actually get out of it as well. I've been very tempted to buy it. It is, as you said, a legacy / campaign game. And a lot of people sometimes can be adverse to that. You know, making permanent changes, you know, putting stickers on a board. But part of it is the experience of, like, if we're sitting down to play the campaign, you know, of My City, it's like, it's really cool to come out the other end and go, this is mine. No one else has.
It was really cool. I had that moment at the end where I picked up my board and my wife's board and we compared the two because they were different. So that was really cool. But, like, you don't be afraid of a campaign game to dive in, because this is, like, the most simplest one that I found, I'd say, because you're slowly making those changes. We played this over 2 years, but if you really played it one night a week, you guys will beat it within 2 months, like, easy.
Yeah, you can knock through a few games in every sitting, I reckon.
Well, that's what we do. Every time we sat down to play, we grabbed one envelope and we played three or four games of it.
Yeah.
And we beat that envelope and we're like, right, now we're ready for the next story another time when we're ready to sit down and play a game.
Fantastic, yeah. Okay. Well, look, I know we've actually been having a bit of a discussion off air with a couple of the other guys, and they've been interested in potentially doing this as their foray for their partners to get into campaign games.
Oh, yeah.
So I think Matt was talking about it going, you know.
Yeah, Matt was messaging me about that game as well.
He seems very interested, and it seems like this could be a good game. Do you remember the first time I ever played Risk Legacy, and the box says, okay, stick this on your character, and now rip the card up and throw it in the bin. And you're just like,
yeah, so
it feels like a blasphemous.
Yeah, you know. I think that Pandemic Legacy, the first time you tear a card up, I was just really hesitant to do that, but now it's fun, and I like playing those type of games with new players where I give them the card and watch them squirm as they try and stare it up.
Well, that's the thing, because there's that part of you that's always like, no, but this is a game. We're supposed to replay this.
You paid
game.
For this. We paid thing. For this thing. Yeah, but yeah. My City, you're not tearing up cards. You're literally putting enhancements on the tiles and on the map and things like that, which is really cool.
Yeah. So, look, speaking of putting tiles on a map, I think we're going to shift now from My City, which gets a bit of a recommendation from Mr. Ralph. We're going to shift to a game now called Seize Rome in 20 Minutes. Now, I'm going to put this out there as this is one of my new favorite two-player games.
Yeah,
solely two-player game. Oh,
no, one to two-player
game. One to two. You can play it as against the automata.
Okay.
I don't really ever like playing those kind of things. I much prefer this game. It's a very simple game, and I know the name Caesar, Seize Rome in 20 Minutes is kind of long. But just bear with me, because this is a really cool two-player game. I talked this to Ralph tonight. It is the sequel to Blitzkrieg, World War II in 20 Minutes, designed by Paolo Mori. So this is his follow-up, his sequel. So Caesar is basically a two-player game where we are fighting for control of Italy. But the way that the game works is very simple.
The Roman Empire.
Of the Roman Empire.
Italy.
Yeah, well, I should say it's also got the Mediterranean Sea, so are right. So, it's more like the Mediterranean.
So it's got all the
regions
around.
But it's a very dumbed-down, very simple war game for two players. The way that it works is really simple. We have territories, and those territories have little symbols on the edges of those territories. You just need to play little circle symbols that match them. So we have infantry, which are shields. We have infantry, which are swords, shieldmen. We have boats, and
that's it.
Those are the three things. We also have a wild symbol on the token. So if you have the wreath, you can play that anywhere. But very simply, you are only allowed to play the symbol of token on the region that matches. And your decision space is even simpler, because you only start the game with two tokens behind your player board. You only can pick this token or that token and put it somewhere on the game board.
Like, I think at most you'll have three or four tokens.
Yeah, I think you had four in the second game.
Very late.
But you know, you really have a small decision space. But really all it is each of those values have, they're up to six power, strength, you can call it, influence. essentially, when I play it on a border in one of those symbols, one side will be low and one side will be high. So I may have 5 on one side and 1 on the other side, or I may have 3 and 3, or 4 and 2, 6 and 0. You get, they're all adding up to 6. But essentially, by playing a token, I'm essentially putting influence into two different territories. Where this game becomes really interesting is that as the game progresses, each of the territories has a wild or a token, a special ability token in each of those regions. The person who closes that region doesn't necessarily win it, gets the token. So there are 4 of them in the base game. There are a couple of advanced ones, but the base ones are pretty simple. Take an extra turn, flip someone's influence token face up. You can grab another influence token immediately to give yourself an extra token to deal with, or you can grab the Senate token, and that's the only one that has a little bit of
It just helps you get victory points towards the end.
The game ends when, so we each have 12 victory tokens, and we just need to put them onto the board by doing it a couple of ways. We can either take control of a region, if we do that, congratulations. Seize
territory.
Yeah, I've got the most influence or most power in that region, I put a token there. Congratulations, I'm already on the way to winning.
Yeah.
I can, if I have neighboring regions that I control, I not only get the influence token for the region that I control, but I get to put an extra one underneath the border.
It's like the army's like cascading and spreading out. It's absolutely like the other players kind of got to stop you in your tracks.
And the final way that I can do that is that I can grab the Senate tokens. And the Senate tokens are quite simply, on my first Senate token, I get put my influence token in the region, congratulations, but then I put one token under my first Senate token. If I get another Senate token, I put 2 under there. Ooh, I've just doubled. If I get my third Senate token, I put 3 under there. And remember, I only start with 12 tokens. That was 6. So there's a lot going on here. And this game plays in about, it says 20 minutes, and it truly plays in less than 20 minutes. Ralph and I played 2 games of this tonight, and both of them played in under 15 minutes each.
Yeah, I found like the teach was fairly simple for me to grasp, but I really started playing the game properly in our second game.
Yes.
It was really tense. It was slow moving, but it definitely finished within the 20-minute time
frame. Oh, absolutely. There was a few moments where we probably took, especially in that late game, we were taking a good 30 seconds to a minute each to have that choice. But because what ends up happening is the game really starts presenting you with these choices of, okay, I know that if I put my second influence token here, that means Ralph, even though he knows he's not going to win it, may just put it there to grab the wild token. And that token, maybe he needs a Senate token, and now he's only 2 tokens away from winning the game. So it's actually a very intense tug of war game, because it's actually not about winning influence tokens specifically. It's about actually timing when I'm going to place something in an area. There was a moment in our second game, Ralph, where we were fighting over the main Italy region in Rome in the center, and it was 2 away from or 1 away from going, and I then actually could have won it at that moment, but then I moved one into the southern Mediterranean, just
Syria
down there, to let make you have a choice, which is you can take Italy right now, but if you take Italy, I'm going to take that and then potentially screw over something else elsewhere. And you didn't take the main region of the board. I was also hoping that potentially what you were going to do was actually take Syria completely, but you didn't, because I think...
Nate, let's just admit it. I didn't know what I was doing.
you know what you were doing. No, you did. You kind of did know. But there was a moment where like we were both looking at a region going, I can't put my token there, because the moment I put my token there, he's going to take the other region, which will then flip this big battle we had for Italy going on in the center of the board, which is great. Yeah. And it's really like, it is really this simple game. I've taught it to my dad, who just whoops my butt at it. I've played him 3 times. He's won all 3 of them. Oh, and like that first game I played against him, I'm like, oh, just go easy on him, because it's his first time. And last time I taught him a board game, he didn't really enjoy it. So I'll go easy. Kicked my butt. And then the second game I went, right, now I'm going to play for realsies. And he kicked my butt again. And I went, no, it's for serious now. I'm going to win this third game. And he just destroyed me. Like, he's got this really weird tactical mind where he just could control the flow.
And that's what this is. This is a really good tactical game. Yeah. Like, because it literally is, I take my turn, you take your turn, and it goes back and forth. But like, you can plan out your turns. Like, you can put tokens out early in certain areas that you're going to close off later. It was really interesting.
I really like this game. This is like a 2-player only game. It's just got a few tiles, a bag. Each player gets a baggie, which is pretty good. There are a couple of like mini expansions that you can play with. So there's like Centurions, for example. Like if I take a Centurion token, there's like three tokens which are like really overpowered that I can actually grab one of those tokens and bring it into my stack. So you know that I have Centurions, but you don't know particularly which one that I'm going to play. So there's a few of those kind of things. There's also like the Poison Chalice, which means I can tell you to remove one of your Senate tokens and these kind of things. There's a few other things that go down. The game has got such a really cool, like, it's like very bright blue, green, red sort of colors in it on the game board.
The colors were fine, but
look, oh, but yes, as a resident colorblind,
it person, wasn't the colorblindness that bothered me this one. It was the fact the map was too small.
It is very like, small.
All the tokens get clumped really close together. Like, they didn't have to be that close together.
Well, I suppose, though, yeah, they didn't have to be that close together, but they also then, I will admit, especially in that center part of the board, it is very close around, especially around Italy and stuff like that. But yeah. I guess it wasn't.
And, like, having the tokens for each player, like the 12 victory tokens you have, that didn't need to be on the board. You could have that on the side. It's fine.
Yeah, I get that. I guess as well, yeah, from an accessibility. I mean,
like, why probably do I need the name of the game on the board itself as well?
Yeah, that is true. I guess they were trying to make the footprint of it as small as possible, I guess. And
yeah, but it didn't need to be a print at all.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm probably being hypercritical.
No, that's okay. Be hypercritical. Like, we don't have to like everything about every game that we play. I do think the game itself, the mechanically, it is a really solid, really easy to play a game to get into.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that I think you can teach anyone. Like, I literally taught you in less than 5 minutes when we were playing. Mm. And we had all the rules down.
I think I had the advantage because I played Paolo's other game, the Blitzkrieg game. It's very similar, but it's World War II. And I felt like, although in that game as well, it's similar where you have the two or three little circles to put on the board, I like that better because there was more surprise in it. There was more discovery. It's like, well, I'm going to put a nuclear bomb here. Like, it's just, whoa.
I feel like Blitzkrieg as a two-player game is more about bluff and more like it's very much like, am I actually going to win the Western Front?
There's no bluffing in this.
Yeah, this is actually like an actual strategy game. It took the strategy game of like Tigris and Euphrates that we used to play and like dumbed it down even more. It's just like literally,
well, for what it is, it's a fantastic strategy game.
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoy it. It's like, yeah, it's not for every occasion, but if you just want 20 minutes to play a quick, hey, you want to do a quick like war strategy game,
yeah, there's not many of those.
There is a little bit of luck in there in terms of like you only have two tokens and you have to do that, but again, this is one of the reasons why the wealth token is, we talk about, it's like, oh, what's the difference between having two tokens and three tokens? It's like, it's 50%. It's actually so much information. Yeah. You don't,
and because I wanted to play with the wealth token on our second game, I went for that, but it cost me room.
Yeah, and that's the thing, which is like, you know, there's these interesting choices of when you go for stuff. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, me too.
If you want to see it on the YouTube channel again, I'm going to pimp that out. You can see what the box looks like. But that is Caesar Seize Rome in 20 minutes. But I want to talk about this game that we have in front of us. Because I actually enjoyed this game the most out of the games that we played tonight. And the game that we have sitting in front of us is Mandala. I'm not sure.
I think it's Mandala.
Mandala, I believe. It's an Indian term. But this game is brilliant in ways that did not occur to me when we started playing this game. It is I'm going to start here. I'm going to let you take the people through it, Ralph. But this game that we have, it comes in. It's basically a tea towel.
It is a tea
it's
towel.
It's a tea towel.
Yeah, I'm a peon on Italian.
Yes, it is a printed tea towel, and it has a game board that we can play on, and I loved this game. We played three of it, and I love it. So don't we tell people about Mandala for tonight as our final game?
I'm a bit ashamed because I didn't do a lot of prep work for tonight, let's be honest. But there's actually a deep history about this Mandala game, so it's worth checking out and diving into as well. But the way I sell this game is, hey, do you want to play a game where you play on a tea towel?
Just that novelty alone for some people will be like, what do you mean?
It's definitely. Like, my wife has taken this game to my mother-in-law's house just to show her the tea towel and the fact that it's a game board.
I thought you were about to say, and she nearly wiped up her spaghetti with it.
No!
Yeah, you could wash this.
You could wash it, like, for sure, if anything happens during game night, for sure. But yeah, Mandala, it's a fantastic game. It's a card game at its core. And essentially, you're going to make a pretty picture on two sides of the of the tea towel. This pretty picture consists of two giant circles, which are the play area. So you're playing two circles at once, and there's going to be two cards in the center of each circle. Now, each card has one of six colors on it. Okay, so you have your yellow, your purple, your black, green, red, and I think that was six.
Orange.
Thank you. Last color. Perfect. Still can't find an orange. There it is.
Like, I couldn't find a green for the life of me in one of our games.
Yeah, that's right. Nee just needed a green in our game. We could not find it. But essentially, what you're going to do is I'll focus on one circle, one mandala. Each mandala needs six colors in it to be a completed pattern. Now, on your turn, you can either, of your six cards in your hands, you can either place one card in the middle of the mandala, as long as that color is already in the center or not in the mandala in any other location. Or you can play a card on your side of the mandala, and you can only do that if that color is not in the mandala at all, not in the circle. And when you play it on your side, it's essentially a bidding war for the prizes of the colors in the middle.
Mm.
So if you play one on your side, say I played a red on my side, I can only do that if there's no other red anywhere else in that circle. But that means that your opponent can no longer play red on his side, okay? And he can't play any color that's in the center of the mandala. So at the moment, if there's yellow and purple in the center and I've got red on my side, it means he can only play orange, green, or
black.
As soon as all six colors are in the middle of the mandala, we look at who's winning the bidding war, okay? So at the moment, Nee has two and I've got one.
Go to the YouTube channel to see what we're talking about if you want to see it in video.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to explain audio only, but essentially whoever has the most cards on their side wins the mandala.
Yep.
We discard all the cards that are on your bidding side, and then the rest are divvied up in point values. So the person who won, Nee, will get to pick which color he picks first. So he's going to choose orange in this case, and that is now worth 1 point to him. So for the rest of the game, for every orange Nee gets, it's worth 1 point. And we basically go back and forth. So I will take the next color, and then they will take a pick of the next one, and I'll take a pick of my second one. So basically, on your side of your tea towel, you're going to have places for point values. So you're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And the first color you take of any color is going to be worth 1 to you. And the rest go into your scoring location, which is your cup. So say in that first mandala, I had 3 blacks. I'll put one of the blacks on my 1 point value and the remaining 2 into my cup. So you keep going like that, and as the game progresses, you start realizing, oh, red is worth 4 points for Ralph, but it's only worth 1 point for Nee. So Nee might want to sort of take the red just to prevent me from having it. There's a lot of strategy in this one.
Again, this is one of those abstract games, which Mandala actually, I believe, started as a stone game. I believe
they'd have
a bag of stones, and you'd pick stones out, and you'd have stones like it, basically in bluffing style, trying to figure out. And it sounds a little complicated, but at its core, it's just you do one of three things. I can either add, as Ralph said, I can either add cards to the center zone. But if I add a card into there, I'm obviously making that mandala worth more valuable.
Yep.
But by doing that, I can now draw more cards, right? So that's the only way you can draw more cards or stones if you were thinking of the game, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing I can only do is just play it into my bidding area of that mandala. But if I do that, I'm not allowed to draw any more cards. So my hand size is shrinking here. You can play multiples, but maybe the strategy, which I just kind of cottoned onto a bit late, was maybe I just play one here for the moment to lock that color down, and I can come back and add to that color later.
Yep.
Then the other thing as well is the third thing you can do is just discard your hand. Discard any of one color from your hand, draw some more if you don't like it. That's it. Those are your three actions. But then the game starts becoming really interesting, which is, okay, well, I need to have bidded at least one card for this mandala to be able to get a pick of that center contents. So maybe I need to place one on there anyway, knowing that I may not win it, but I'm going to place it there just to make sure that I get some of that contents. And that happened a couple of times in our games where I took them from Ralph just to put a single card there, knowing that I just didn't want you to get the full distribution of points. I needed some of those as well. Yeah, now, I didn't win any of the games we played, but
I played this game a fair bit.
You have, but that still didn't discourage me. The scoring system as well is like, well, you want to finish your man. You want to finish getting all six colors in front of you, because that's how you end the game. But you may not want to end it so early if you know that your opponent has got a lot of all of big high scoring point value cards. It's really that's it. That's as simple as it is. It's basically play a card. Depending on where you play it, depends on if you draw. Do we do some mandala? Like, do we distribute the points? And then that's it. That's the whole game. And
yeah, there's a lot of like nuanced strategy. Like, if I see a red is worth 5 points for knee, I might play a red on my side of the mandala, knowing full well that no red will go in the center.
Yes.
So that will prevent you from points as well.
Exactly. That was one of those things. Yeah. That second game, I caught on too late. I'm like, oh, I should just play a single Carla here to lock you out. If I think you're holding on to reds or something because you're trying to get more points, I'll lock you out. There was one in our second game where there was one of the mandalas was huge. Like, it had nearly 9 cards in the center row. So whoever won that was going to get a good first pick.
Yeah.
And I literally was just searching for a green because I knew I had 3 placed down in front of me and Ralph had 1.
And I think what I started doing was buffing the second pick because I knew I'll get second pick.
Yep.
And then I somehow managed to draw the one color that needed to finish.
Exactly right. I just needed one green to get the 6 color, and then I would guarantee getting a really big points haul. But for about 4 or 5 turns, every time I played, I could not find a green. Granted, you were holding the greens that I was trying to get, so I was getting unlucky with the card draw here.
Mm.
But that's the game, which is sometimes you may be a bit stuffed on card draw, but you know, I did have a green that I played on the other side earlier in that game because I'm like, well, I wanted to lock green down over here so you couldn't play green.
Yep.
And that kind of stuffed me over here because I let go of my green card. Because you're hard locked at 8. You can only ever have 8 cards in your hand. But that's the thing. Unless you play cards into the center, you can't draw more. And that seems really weird because you go, I'm making this stronger and I think Ralph can win, but that's the only way that I can draw more cards.
Yeah.
And it was really tense. I really enjoyed this game. I really liked what we were playing.
I think the fact that you have 2 mandalas to play with really is what makes this a game. If you only have 1, it would just be luck of the draw. But you have some agency as to where you're placing your cards, because essentially you have 4 locations to place your cards every time. And it's like, there's just so much strategy as to locking your opponent out or trying to bank the right points at the right time. It's just, it's tense.
Yeah. And this is great. Like, it honestly, it's, again,
it sounds like it surprised you.
Yeah, look, because I remember seeing a Shut Up and Sit Down review on this years ago. Mm. 6, maybe 7 years ago. They did this one a long time ago. And I looked at it going, yeah, it looks kind of nice. Looks all right. Yep. It's fine. But it's not until I sat down and you play it with someone that you go, oh, I get the game here. The game is...
It's a good game.
It's a very good game. The game is this push and pull of like, okay, do I want to load this up to get some points to go over here, but I'm going to load up all the 1-pointers for Ralph because I know that he just needs 1-pointers. Or do I lock in myself into this one over here and try and get a big points haul? That's the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of going on here. Like, I don't know how, but every time I looked up in your hand, you had 6 cards and sometimes I had 2. And I'm like, yeah. I'm certain I've been taking as many cards as you have, but apparently you're just...
I kept building up the middle pile and then just smacking down my bids, essentially.
Yeah, exactly right. And I thought, like, and that's one of those things. I'm sitting there going, I don't know what I've done wrong. How did I do this? And then I went, no, review. On review, that's the word I've got.
On reflection.
On reflection, that's the word I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, what I love about this game as well, it ramps up, not in complexity, but the stakes ramp up.
Yes.
Because you're playing the same game the whole time, but you're starting out, you're getting 1, 2, 3 points, and you're kind of understanding what's worth. And then when you realize, I don't have any reds yet, the next red I take is going to be worth 4 or 5 points. I'm going to try and bank that up. So, like, as you get used to the game, then it really matters.
I really liked it. There's such a deep history here that we haven't gone through tonight because we could honestly do a whole episode on just this game alone and why this is probably what the history of it and stuff. We're not going to do that tonight.
Yeah, it's probably one of the oldest games around, I believe.
Yeah. I'm fairly certain I do remember this game, at least from what I have minuscule I've read about it. But I'm fairly certain this game was initially a stone game. You had a bag of stones, you pull stones out. I'd be holding stones in my hand.
I think you're thinking of Mancala.
Maybe.
Yeah, Mancala is one where it kind of looks similar to this, except you don't have the mandala thing in the middle. So if I just fold this tea towel,
right,
Mancala kind of looks like that, where you have
like little hole,
like five and five holes or so. And what do? You pick up your rocks, and then you move one, but you drop one, you move your hand to the right again, and you drop one, and you keep doing that, and you're trying to put the rocks in your cup. It's a very similar game.
It wouldn't
still a very good game.
It wouldn't surprise me if this actually started as a rock game, though, because looking at it.
Well, I know they drew it in sand.
Yeah, but I'm also looking at this going, this little reminds me of like a bowl of some description of like they may have had like. They may have had like a bowl and you drop things in the bowl.
We don't know.
Who knows?
We don't know.
Look, we're making it up. Maybe I'm right. Probably I'm wrong. But like, that's that game. So. Anyway, man, we've talked about a few two-player games, but this one was my favorite for the night. I have to admit that we played. We didn't play a Splendor Duel, but that's one on my list.
Yeah, well, we'll get to Splendor Duel, I think, later on.
This is one of my this was my favorite game of the night, I have to admit.
We did play one two-player game during the week as well. We've mentioned it previously.
Yeah, we did. So last week you'll have noticed that there was no podcast. That was because trying to organize the last week was... the boys was a bit of a pain. So we decided that Ralph and I decided, hey, let's get together and let's, record some content. It wouldn't be great. Let's record some.
Let's make play. Some content for
let's
the
make
channel.
A let's play content. Let's go and do a best of three in Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah.
And you'll have noticed that never came out.
No.
Because I thought I was recording audio, but apparently I wasn't. I went back and reviewed the thing. I'm like, why is it silent?
If you want, we can release like a silent film of us playing the game. Just make it black and white and we'll put some piano music on it.
No. Yeah, maybe. And the subtitles.
Yeah, well, no, you know how like the screen goes to black and it just says, oh no.
Watch out, a train's incoming. They could be fun. Yeah, we did that. And we played a best of three, which was great because Ralph was asking because he wanted to see the Pantheon expansion.
Yeah, I've never played Pantheon before.
So we played the Pantheon expansion. That was really good. That was a lot of fun. We played that again. Seven Wonders Duel for me is the next step up from the intro two-player games. But when you're playing that, that is actually still my favorite all-time two-player game.
Yeah, I'd say it's up there for me as well. It's really tense, and the decision space, although you're only making, you have three or four choices each turn, there is an overarching strategy to it.
Yeah, look, I have to admit as well, when I first played with the Pantheon expansion, which I bought and I've got actually in person as well, I didn't really think I liked
it. You didn't gel with it?
I just didn't gel with it in the first couple of plays, but then every time because this tournament that I've been playing in forced me to play Pantheon, I've got to admit, I love Pantheon, the expansion. The Pantheon expansion just adds these god powers that just make you feel so overpowered. And like, if you can get these combos going,
it makes each of the acts interesting.
Yes.
The first two anyway. The last one is, I don't know. It felt the same to me, but the first two definitely changed.
Yeah, the first two definitely. Well, the last one changes a little bit, but it depends on when you decide to buy the gods. Like, if you buy all the gods in age two, then age three is more about,
it's the normal game.
Figuring it out. Yeah. But it's also like it can build that crescendo. I'm actually now, as a bit of an update for those of you keeping score, I've lost two games in a row. I played a game in this tournament that I'm in, but the game that I went for, I literally had this moment of like, oh my God, what happened, because I went for a science victory and this guy played a really fantastic game, nearly got me on the military track, but I defended, and I thought I had calculated correctly, that I thought there was one face down card and I thought it was a science symbol, because I'm like, there's two of this science symbol in this age and I haven't seen the second one yet, that has to be it. It wasn't it, and the reason is because you don't shuffle every single card. You don't deal out two of them or one or
two.
Yeah,
I think two from each deck come out.
Yeah, and because of that, I thought that was the science card, so I based my whole plan around, like, if I get this, I can get that.
It's a risky
enough
play.
Money. I did that, and I was like, yes, I'm going to get it. Yes, yes. Turn it over. Oh no, it's not a science card. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
But I risked it for the big win there. I'm like, I'm going to try and get this win here.
You had to. That was a play.
Yeah, so now I'm still over 500. I'm 60% now on the tournament, but we will continue on.
I just want to say that night we did play, Nee decided to do best of three. And I'm thinking, all right, so we're going to play two games of this thing.
Well, you got...
I somehow got the W in the second game. I can't believe it.
look, you got me with the military.
I think so.
You got me with the military. So. Yeah. And that's the thing. This is what I found about...
And the third game was really tense,
this is what
too.
I found about the Pantheon expansion, is that it actually makes the science and the military victories more feasible. That's what I found in playing this game a lot, which is that it now adds a lot more weight to those victories because there are more options for me to get the science symbols and there are more options for me to push the military track down the side.
I think it's a fantastic expansion. I've been meaning to learn it and try it for a couple of years now because I've heard that really does add a lot to Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah.
I think there is a third expansion, which I haven't explored.
It's Agora.
But I've heard it's not fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not really keen to go get it yet.
Yeah.
A lot of people say it doesn't really add that much. Yeah.
It's like the third Res Arcana expansion doesn't add a whole lot value
it
to the game.
Adds bloat,
yeah,
is what I've
heard.
But
the first expansion is fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can happen. Like, sometimes they expand a little too much. But, yeah, Seven Wonders Duels. Fantastic. Yeah. Like, if you're a core gamer, like, it's such a small, simple game, but, like, there's a lot there.
I will say, though, as well, though, not just for core gamers. I've taught my wife, Georgie, I've played this, and I've said to her with this game, the biggest compliment I can give you about this game is that I cannot take it easy on you. I have to actually play.
Yeah, look, like, my wife beats me at it every time.
Well, Georgie, like, there was a few times I remember early on where I was like, I take it a bit easier just to let her get the feel the reins, try out different strategies, let her try and find the combos. But now it's to the point where I'm like, if I take it easy on you, she'll just win. Yeah. Like, there's no more of this, like, she's good enough that I have to try to actually beat her, otherwise she just wins.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at, so.
That's a fantastic game, that one.
Yeah, I do love that one. All right, well, look, we've covered a few games here. Now, this is by no means all of the two-player games that are out there. That we've got so many more that we could talk about.
Yeah, I hope you guys found something interesting that you might want to try down the line as well.
Yeah, look, yeah. There are so many games out there. If you've still made it this far in the podcast, leave us a comment. What's one of your favorite two-player games? We'd love to know what you like to play. Is there two-player games that you like to play with your significant other, your partner? Are there two-player games that you refuse to play with your partner because of... So we'd love to hear all about it. But
if you feel like there's any games we must play, let us know.
Yeah, yeah. So we will also, at the end of this episode, we'll start to just get a little bit of a hype, which we have an upcoming article on our website, which is going to be from our man Ralph here. So there's he is the campaigner, and we'll say that there is a little bit of an article around that flair coming out. That is actually going to coincide with the release of our brand new website, which is still looks the same, but will actually is technically completely different on the back end, which is great. So we can actually do things like filter out. You can filter out podcasts. If you only want to see the episodes with Ralph, you can filter out myself and just go to the Ralph episodes. That's fine.
I don't know if anyone would want to do that.
I'm
let's
sure.
be honest.
Well, maybe Tina. No,
no
let's be honest.
She hears enough from me.
But anyway, speaking of our website, go to www.boardgamegateway.com. There you can find all the links to our social medias, the podcast, to our YouTube channel. You can find all of the fun things there as well. We'd love to see you there. Go to our Facebook channel, our Facebook page, all that other fun stuff. We'd love to see you as part of this community. Until next time, though, we keep on gaming, and we should go play some more.
Yeah, 7-1 this job.
Yeah, sure, why not? All right, guys.
Let's make some content.
We'll just
like
40 minutes, not tall.
It'll be like a 10-hour video. So just see
I just like.